From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Wisconsin Supreme Court this week voted to overturn Governor Tony Evers' executive order to postpone Tuesday's primary election over the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. Supreme Court then ruled 5-4 that the thousands of people who had requested absentee ballots in Wisconsin but never received them would have to show up in person to vote in spite of the health risks. Voters lined up for hours facing closed polling places and even rain and hail. At stake for Republicans is a state Supreme Court seat currently held by a conservative facing a liberal challenger. The decision to move ahead with the election on Tuesday forced Wisconsin's voters to pit their own health against their right to vote, foreshadowing what could transpire in the general election this November. While Democrats have pushed for an expansion of vote by mail, President Donald Trump has openly called on his party to fight the move, saying Republicans don't benefit from mail-in ballots. My guest is Jeff Milchen. He's an organizer, speaker, and writer, and founder of Reclaim Democracy. And he recently wrote an article called Dying to Vote and a Warning for November. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
So can you explain what exactly happened? How is it that the Supreme Court got involved? I understand that the state-level Supreme Court in Wisconsin initially overturned the governor's order that was made on Monday.
Right. So there were two separate Supreme Court decisions on the eve of the election, one at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And what they ruled was that the governor's order to stop the election the day before the election because of the public health crisis was unconstitutional, according to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So they stopped the election from being postponed until June, which was what Governor Evers planned to do. In a separate ruling soon afterward, the U.S. Supreme Court said that a plan to allow an extra week for absentee ballots to be mailed and counted was unconstitutional. The reason for that action by the state was that because of the flood of individual requests for absentee ballots, for obvious reasons, they couldn't keep up with the demand, and thousands of people still did not have an absentee ballot on the eve of the election. So obviously it would be impossible for many of them to have the ballot postmarked by election day if they didn't even have a ballot in their hands. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down that action as well, and that's what caused the real fiasco in Green Bay and Milwaukee and many other cities, with people having no choice but to either sacrifice their vote or go join mobs of people and wait for hours, often in some horrendous weather, to exercise their right to vote.
So I understand that there were people who had initially requested, or weeks earlier had requested, absentee ballots that then waited and waited for those ballots to arrive and didn't get them. Is that true? And if so, how widespread a problem was this? And did that simply mean that a voter going in person would have been able to cast their ballot successfully?
Yes. So according to the state, there were at least 9,000 ballots that were not mailed out as of the day before Election Day. So at least that many people would not have received their ballot, probably significantly more. And that included Milwaukee city officials, even a woman who wouldn't have been able to vote for her own election for her race. So that created, the mobs of people, many who obviously would not be able to wait in line for hours, and certainly disenfranchised at least tens of thousands of people. The voting turnout in Milwaukee was about 1/10 of the normal number.
Wow. So I understand that in some very densely populated areas like Milwaukee, instead of 180 polling places, which is the normal number, there were only 4 that were open. Why is that?
Yes. I heard reports there were 5 out of 180 open, but absolutely the same coin applies. That was largely because, understandably, a lot of poll workers decided that risking their lives to make a few bucks in extra pocket money was probably not a trade-off they were willing to make. So rather than having an opportunity to go to smaller neighborhood polling precincts, people were forced to join absolute mobs at just five precincts around the city of Milwaukee, five polling places. And a very similar situation was occurring up in Green Bay. So it turned what was already a horrible situation into an even worse one, where maintaining, you know, safe distancing was almost an impossibility under those circumstances.
Obviously, I can imagine that that an election going forward in such a manner, in particular, might disenfranchise elderly voters, disabled voters, people with the underlying health conditions that we are being told are most vulnerable to this disease and need to shelter in place, in a manner that's much more serious.
Certainly, it absolutely is disenfranchising the most vulnerable in society. And, you know, it's certainly no coincidence that, in my view, when we see these efforts that are especially impacting the urban centers, the more densely populated areas, those that also tend to be the most heavily populated by minorities. In the case of Milwaukee, Blacks far outnumber whites in the city, and an additional 18% of the population is Hispanic. So about 60% of the population is minority in Milwaukee. And you think about what would have happened if the situation was reversed, and instead of Milwaukee and Green Bay, it was 180 polling locations shut down around the rural areas of northern Wisconsin. We simply don't see that. It's a very deliberate disenfranchisement strategy on the part of the Republican Party.
Was it clear to you that what was really at stake for the conservatives, both at the state level and potentially even at the federal Supreme Court level, that there was an interest in seeing a single seat held by a conservative and being challenged by a liberal on the state Supreme Court be preserved, that this was something that Republicans were relying on? I mean, of course, it's not necessarily clear if the federal Supreme Court justices would have necessarily been moved by the same concerns that state-level Republicans would be moved by, but it certainly seemed as though the Republicans and the conservatives aligned in their own interest.
Certainly. You know, there's currently a 4-2 majority on the part of conservative justices on the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin. One of those seats was up for election, and it was a very, you know, expected to be a very tightly contested race. That may or may not be the case when we see the results now expected to come out on Monday. There's a whole cycle going on here. Wisconsin has some of the most extreme gerrymandering of any state in the union, so that even though Democrats received an overwhelming majority of the votes in the last election cycle, the Republicans hold the majority in the state legislature because they succeeded in packing so much of the Democratic vote into very few precincts and distorted the outcome of the results that way. So they are dependent on that Supreme Court majority now to keep those gerrymandered districts in place rather than overturning them, which is likely to happen if there were a shift in the balance of the state Supreme Court. So there's a whole cycle of disenfranchisement, voter suppression, and partisan advantage here that's in play.
So in order to preserve the unfair advantage that Republicans were enjoying in Wisconsin, they used more unfair means to insist on voting on Tuesday and thereby likely ensuring that they preserved that advantage. Essentially, voter suppression begets gerrymandering.
Yeah. And, you know, at the U.S. Supreme Court, the partisanship was pretty naked. Their ruling said that because extending the date by which absentee ballots could be received, that would, quote, fundamentally alter the nature of the election too close to election day.
So their decision to void absentee ballots was basically based on the effectiveness of absentee ballots.
Right. And meanwhile, they did not address at all the situation going on in many of the cities in Wisconsin of massive disenfranchisement because of the lack of available polling places. That was not, in their view, something that would rise to the level of impacting altering the nature of the election in a fundamental way.
And President Donald Trump has been saying as much out loud as well in what may have, you know, that essentially echoing what the Supreme Court justices who voted to void the absentee ballot said. He has railed against mail-in balloting, voting by mail, and essentially openly said, for whatever reasons, Republicans don't do well when there is voting by mail. And when he was asked this week why voting by mail was, in his words, so corrupt, given that he himself had mailed in his own ballot, because now his home state is Florida, he said, of course he would do so, because that's his right to do so. And he just saw no irony in him condemning other people's right to vote by mail.
Right. It's interesting in that there's really scant evidence that it actually would advantage Democrats to have universal mail-in voting. In fact, in Wisconsin, the early results from mail-in appeared to be much more heavily weighted on the Republican side. So there's no question his intentions are bad, but in this case, his focus may not be actually helpful for the Republican Party.
So this is, you know, such a bizarre situation that we have today. The idea of an election moving forward in spite of a pandemic to further this naked partisanship and having that reflected at the federal level, it seems as though Republicans feel that the only way they can remain in power is by reducing access to voting. I mean, Trump, in his remarks to reporters, invoked, you know, and he does this so effectively because he's so good at manipulating people, he invoked this image of people sitting in their living room filling out thousands and thousands of ballots, basically implying that they're sitting there rigging elections by the thousands. But somehow his own mail-in ballot, which was properly certified and sealed, was legitimate, but other people were apparently getting away with filling out thousands and thousands of ballots. There's no such evidence suggesting that anyone's ever done this, right?
It's pure fiction. And you know, certainly it would be nice if the media simply refused to carry those kind of remarks from Donald Trump on air. It's an absolute disgrace that the major broadcasting networks continue to give him a live microphone and camera to spew lies that are not fact-checked in real time. That's something that, you know, there's certainly been a lot of discussion around the country, and I think a few networks have started pulling back on that. But it's essentially, you know, giving an opportunity for a proven liar to disinform the public, not only about crucial issues to democracy, but about public health that are literally costing people their lives in many cases. So that's something that certainly needs to change as well. You know, in the bigger picture, I think we also need to really reframe the debate, because people who value democracy have been waging nonstop defensive battles against one disenfranchisement scheme after another, whether it's purging voter rolls of likely progressive voters, whether it's disenfranchising people through technical issues. We need to figure out a proactive strategy to be able to make sure that voting rights are strengthened and ultimately, I would say, enshrined in the Constitution. Because we have a Supreme Court that's demonstrated time and time again that we cannot rely on them to safeguard voting rights, that it's up to us to take that kind of long-term structural change to embed a right to vote in the Constitution and not subject it to the whims of any temporary majority on the Supreme Court.
So with respect to the elections that are yet to happen, I understand something like half the country, half the states in the country have yet to vote. With the dropping out of the race by Bernie Sanders, the presidential nominee races are for both the Republicans and the Democrats are essentially a done deal. There are, of course, other races that are on those ballots. Do you have any sense of how these other primary races that are yet to take place will play out in the backdrop of this, with this pandemic still looming over us for months on end?
It's really tough to predict. I mean, hopefully with a little bit more time, other states will do a better job than Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin was the only state in the past 3 weeks that had an election scheduled that went ahead with it rather than postponing it. But we also need to be setting our sights on November and making sure that there is universal opportunity for mail-in voting, that it be, you know, done automatically, not having to request a ballot, that it they be postage paid envelopes, so there's not an effective poll tax. And folks really need to be paying attention to that right now, because November is not that far off in terms of planning to put measures in place to make sure we actually have free and fair elections. Certainly would encourage folks who are interested to check out the plan that Elizabeth Warren published earlier this week, that offers some very good guidelines on voting rights. On our website, reclaimdemocracy.org, along with the article published on the Wisconsin elections, there are some resources that address that as well. But encourage folks to really get informed about what's needed and start speaking up about having universal voting in November.
Yeah, let's talk in a little bit more detail about that, because when the coronavirus pandemic was declared, one of the first things that went through my mind was, our incumbent president, who's already joked about serving, you know, a third and a fourth term, and who's clearly demonstrated over and over again that he will bend rules, break rules and laws in order to stay in power, will likely use this disaster that's unfolding as a reason to illegitimately cling to power. And so now, what is in what's really needed for the November election is a massive expansion of vote by mail. Should we not assume that the coronavirus will, be a serious enough issue by November and plan as such?
Absolutely. We need to plan for based on the assumption that voting in person will not be safe, and make sure that absolutely no one is in a position where they need to do that. If by chance we're in the clear by then, and there's an option to for states to be able to offer that option of in-person voting, that's certainly a different scenario. But we need to plan on the expectation that it will not be. And certainly, along with, I should say, universal mail-in voting, we also should have an option of greatly extended in-person voting for at least a month or more, where people can walk into an election office in their county. Because there are many people in the country, especially on Native American Indian reservations, that do not necessarily have reliable mail service, and where we want to make sure that they have other options as well.
California did this during its primary election with voting places within the county open for, I believe, well over a week before the actual election. Anybody could within that county could go into any polling place and cast their ballot. So people were able to do it over the weekend, you know, when ordinarily doing it on a weekday might be tough. There are definitely options. We know it's doable. And yet the option of voting by mail is not even universal, right? Aren't there several states where it's not really an option?
Well, right now there are just four states that actually have universal mail-in voting.
Most states don't have it.
Minority of the states, then we have about another 30 states where you can vote by mail, but you have to request the ballot, even though no excuse is required. And then there are another 10 or so states where you actually need to say, here's my excuse for not being able to come in and cast a vote in person. And those excuses can even be rejected in many states by election officers. So we're a long, long way from where we need to be for November to have that kind of universal, no excuse voting in place.
So what specifically has Senator Elizabeth Warren proposed in her plan for trying to salvage our universal right to vote by this November? I know that there was some attempt to appropriate funds during the economic stimulus package discussions to expand mail-in balloting.
Right. So it's a pretty broad plan that includes a lot of measures specifically to thwart disenfranchisement schemes, as well as proactive measures to make sure that there is universal mail-in voting available. And part of that comes down to money. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party nationally passed the stimulus bill with an absolute sliver of what's needed to actually help the states do universal mail-in voting in the fall. Just $400 million was authorized. Senator Warren estimated $5 billion was necessary. So for the Democrats to go ahead and approve that bill without making sure that that was part of the initial stimulus package, I would say was a huge mistake, and hopefully one that won't be made a second time, because there's clearly going to be a need for additional funding to fund the SBA small business loan program, for example, that already is out of money because side issue, but that was opened up to a lot of large corporations that are certainly not small businesses. Those funds are going to run out imminently, and so there will be a lot of pressure on Congress to come back and pass more funding. Democrats absolutely need to make sure that adequate election funding is part of any second round of stimulus funding.
In your opinion, are the Democrats fighting hard enough to make this ensure that our right to vote is properly protected? I mean, according to the Republicans, it's only Democrats who benefit from universal right to vote. I mean, it's just kind of strange even saying those words, because it would be nice to assume that all Americans respect that right, in particular people who are actually elected officials. But Democrats who rely on a more diverse voter base and younger people being able to cast ballots, are they fighting hard enough for this?
Certainly not, in my view. And, you know, having universal voting access is good for democracy. It's not good for a political party. For any elected official to frame this in terms of how we can gain partisan advantage is disgraceful, in my view. But the Democrats have not even come close to doing enough on this front. And, you know, again, think about what happened in Wisconsin. In the reverse scenario, would a Republican governor have simply allowed rural communities across the state to be disenfranchised? I think we all know the answer to that, that they would not bend over and simply meekly accept a ruling that worked against their interests. And Democrats are simply continuing to play wiffle ball while the Republicans play hardball. And when it comes to voting rights, say we need to, and this is one of the things ReclaimDemocracy.org advocates, is working toward an actual constitutional amendment to say voting is an affirmative right, and that we have the right to vote, to have our votes counted equally, and that cannot be taken away at the whim of a state legislature. Because presently, despite all the talk you hear about our right to vote, we actually have no such right. It's simply a privilege that is left up to state governments to grant or deny and control as they see fit.
And the Supreme Court intervening as it sees fit, sadly.
Right. And this has been made clear not just recently, but dating back to 2000 in two separate Supreme Court decisions, Alexander versus Mineta, and then, of course, Bush v. Gore, where the Supreme Court explicitly said citizens do not have a right to have their vote for the presidential electors. And so we can, you know, disagree with the Supreme Court justices and say they're partisan and wrong. But in any case, something as fundamental as voting should not be left to the temporal majority of a Supreme Court. It should be driven into the Constitution, where it is a permanent and inalienable right. So that's what our work at Reclaim Democracy is focused on, is the long-term movement building work to make sure that 10, 20 years from now, voting is a right that will never be taken away from people again.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article as well as Reclaim Democracy from our website. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
My guest has been Jeff Milchen, organizer, speaker, and writer, and founder of Reclaim Democracy. We've been discussing Wisconsin's primary race, which took place Tuesday, what it means for the general election in November. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.